for others, there is need of patient, laborious exercise in knowing God through the practice of mental prayer meditation. In the end, their faith will certainly come awake and alive. It will arouse their love, and raise their hearts up in prayer. I recommend that you recite the following prayer of Saint Augustine from time to time. It will kindle in you the need to know and will stimulate your search. O Lord my God, my only hope, listen to me. Do not permit me to stop seeking you out of lassitude, but grant that I may eagerly seek your face. Give me the strength to seek you, just as you have enabled me to find you more and more. Here before you are my strength and my infirmity, guard my strength. Heal my infirmity. Here before you are my knowledge and my ignorance, where you have opened the way to me, welcome my coming, where you have closed the door, open it to my cry. 33. Letter to Paul and Monique. You, too, are asking me for a book of meditations. You will have to learn to decipher the book that God has given you, your marriage. Let me explain. When I was a young priest, I used to enjoy visiting a painter friend of mine in his studio. True artists have a quality of soul that seems to be their privilege, I do not say their monopoly, since this quality is also found in the saints. It is a certain freshness of feeling, perhaps I should call it candor, that is closely akin to spiritual childhood. My friend possessed this quality in a rare degree. The years had, as it were, filtered and purified this precious quality of soul in him. When he took his visitors around his studio, presenting his canvases to them, and marveling at them like a young mother before her newborn child, no one was annoyed. For there was no trace of vanity in his manner, only fervor. Even more than his paintings, I loved to contemplate his beautiful, vibrant face. His astonishingly mobile features reflected different nuances and vibrations, depending on the canvas he was describing. He did not love all his works equally. He would linger with special predilection before some of them, no doubt the ones in which he had expressed the best that was in him. He delighted in them with a childlike joy, watching for my reaction. This joy intensified as I began to understand his canvas better, or rather his feelings, of which the canvas was simply the reflection. Many a time, after leaving his studio, my thoughts turned to God. God, in the vast studio that is the universe, leads us by the hand to present his works to us. He wants to help us spell them out and to discover their deep inner meaning, so that he can introduce us through them to his own thoughts and sentiments. God is not engrossed by all of his creatures in the same degree. There are some before which he stops, and before which he makes us pause at greater length. They are the ones into which he has put the best of himself, through touch he reveals his loftiest perfections to us. Love, the union of man a/id woman, is among them. Everything had been created, one day after the other, and on the sixth day the creation of man had been the uoning achievement. However, God's divine endeavor was still unfinished. It still remained for marriage to be instituted. And so God formed Eve and united her to Adam. This union of man and woman spoke eloquently of his magnificent plan, still hidden in the mists of the future, the union between his Son and redeemed humanity. How could he not have a predilection for Marie, the last of his creations in point of time? It is no surprise, therefore, that we are constantly making discoveries about life in the married state. No surprise that all the mystics, following the Bible, speak of marriage as a symbol of the riches of love that union with Christ holds for us. Paul and Monique, please understand that your married life is filled with meaning. Don't be like those illiterates who look at written page and don't realize that it means something, that it is perhaps a beautiful poem. Your marriage is not only a great human reality. It is also rich with supernatural meaning. There is someone who reveals his heart to you through marriage, who reveals his impatient desire to establish between each of you and himself bonds of love that will give far greater happiness than those of marriage. There is someone who, through your marriage, wants to help you understand what he hopes from you, what your relationship with him should be throughout life. I want to cite three texts that will show you how we are to read and understand the parable that is human love. I am correct in saying parable, because human love is written in a cipher. A certain innocence of the eyes is needed to decipher the divine message that lies hidden within marriage. The first text is in a letter from a friend who lives in Morocco. His wife had spent her vacation in France, far from him, but was soon expected home. He was preparing himself for her return. In so doing, his thoughts rose to noble heights. I am expecting Françoise in a week. If we prepared for our communions the way we prepare to see our spouses again, I think we would make serious progress in the knowledge and love of Christ. I excerpt the second text from Jacques Mailet's Lettre à sa fiancée. He was deeply convinced that divine love surpasses human love, without thereby lessening the value of the latter. His love for Madeleine made him think of God, and his love of God made him think of Madeleine. To think of you, Madeleine, is to be obliged to regain a more naive joyousness, to be forced to combat sadness, so as to be worthier of one of your glances. My attitude toward the one I love teaches me the attitude I should have toward God. It gives me a keener desire to be in his presence, to do his will, which is never capricious. It teaches me an interior recollection where his presence should eclipse all lesser concerns. If only I yearned for God the way I yearn for my little Mad. If only I was as eager at every moment to cast aside everything that separates me from God the way I strive to remove every obstacle that furtively comes between you and me. Last, there is this testimony cited among others in the report on the Inquiry on Mental Prayer published in a special issue of You Adore, Seigneur, Apprends Nous à Prier, Lord, Teach Us to Pray. One woman recounts that she discovered the meaning of mental prayer from her dialogue with her husband. Does not this dialogue, which sometimes attains a superhuman quality in an atmosphere of silence, bear the same relation to human love that mental prayer does to the union of the human person with God? Is it not the moment of intense intimacy, in which love expresses itself most perfectly and is at the same time renewed? Once I had decided to practice mental prayer, I simply jumped in without really knowing how to go about it. And then suddenly there was a light. First and above all, I probably had to establish a state of spiritual intimacy between myself and God. After that, it was very simple, since I have been in training in that kind of gymnastics in my married life. When I want our evenings together to be times of true intimacy, I silence within me all the buzzing of domestic worries, of problems with the children, of various jobs to finish. I try to free myself from all that, so as to make myself available to my husband in heart, mind, and soul, ready to listen to his worries, his thoughts, his difficulties. And afterwards we may talk about our children, about my worries, or my work, but we do it in a purified atmosphere. Reflection on our married life was my first initiation into mental prayer. Several times when I had the feeling of dreading in place, I wanted to delve into Saint Teresa, for example, but then something would keep me from it. I then understood that there is another biography to consult, the biography every married couple writes together day by day. And now that I have shown you the way, Paul and Monique, it is up to you to decipher the parable of your marriage, and to make your own discoveries about it. But following the example of the apostles, be sure to ask Christ to explain its meaning to you. Otherwise you will be like those of whom the Master said, "They look but do not see, they listen but do not hear or understand. Sluggish indeed is this people's heart. They have firmly closed their eyes, otherwise they might understand with their hearts, and turn back to me, and I should heal them." Mark 13:13-15. 34. To a young man engaged to be married. My dear Frangui, in my last letter I invited you to take advantage of the privileged time of your engagement to discover the riches and demands of love, so that you can build your marriage on a solid foundation. But your union with Christ should also benefit immensely from this wonderful experience of betrothal. I know, of course, that it is sometimes said that the hearts and minds of an engaged couple are closed to everyone else. That's true in the case of a selfish, possessive, and carnal love. But it is not true of real Christians. Their love, on the contrary, opens their hearts and minds to others, to the world, and to God. I have often seen for myself that this is so. May your engagement be a path that leads to God. May it inspire you to give Him thanks for your happiness and ask for His help. Above all, may it enable you to advance deeper into the knowledge and love of Christ. Life with Christ, especially during mental prayer, is also a dialogue of love, a spiritual encounter, and a communion of souls. Admittedly, sensibility and emotion play a great role in the love of an engaged couple. The soul's love for Christ, on the other hand, while not excluding nuances of sensibility and affectivity, is rooted above all in faith. The fact remains that the same fundamental laws are at work at all levels of love. A letter I recently received illustrates what I have just said. My habit of always beginning my mental prayer by offering God my joy goes back to the distant days of my engagement to be married. And this is how it came about. When Bernadette and I were together, I would be terribly unhappy if I sensed that she was not happy. I was equally wretched when, in her letter, she failed to say that our separation was hard for her. On the other hand, when we were together, I was filled with intense happiness if she seemed to radiate joy. I was very happy, too, when she wrote me of her sadness at being away from me. These reactions began to worry me. Why did I need her to be happy when she was near, and unhappy when we were apart? Were these not mediocre, egocentric feelings, revealing self-love rather than a disinterested love for her? I remember mulling this question over and over until one day I saw the light. To love another person is to want that person to be happy. When contemplating marriage, one must ask oneself whether one is capable of making the other happy, or being the other's happiness. Anyone who did not ask himself the question with a certain anxiety could not be genuinely in love. The day I understood this, I was freed from all anxiety and scruples, and I was as proud as if I had been the first to make the discovery. The next day, when Bernadette asked me what she could do to make me happy, I had my answer ready. Nothing except to be happy yourself, happy over my presence and my love, happy over me. Your joy that I read so often in your face and in your eyes, the joy I guess at in your heart, that is the most wonderful gift you can offer me. That evening, as I prayed by my bed before retiring, a thought suddenly came to me. If the most Bernadette can do to make me happy is to offer me her joy over being loved by me, then there is probably nothing better I can do to make God happy than offer Him my joy in His presence, in His love, and in His happiness. I quickly realized that this joy on my part was not very strong, and I was deeply ashamed. I promised myself to visit with my God more assiduously, so that this joy might grow within me, and so that my offering might become more pleasing to Him. Many years have gone by. I have rarely missed my daily mental prayer, and I always begin by offering up my joy. Not the least benefit of this is that I am brought each day to ask myself the question, is God really my joy? If I notice that this joy is decreasing, I know what conclusion to draw. I must become more attentive to my God's love for me. My dear Frangui, that is only an example. At least it has the merit of clearly showing how human love, in one of its aspects, can be an invitation to divine love. But there is also the need to live this human love well, to recognize its riches and demands, and to discern the allusions within it to the world of divine grace. 35. The Arid Garden,